Hey guys, this week on Crap Vegas, we are going to talk about the perfect Vegas property, top Vegas restaurants, Resorts World, and so much more. So stick around.
Welcome to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Vegas, here we come.
Vegas!
Here are your hosts, Chris and Josh.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 41 of the Crap Vegas Podcast. I am Chris. He is Josh. Josh, what's going on?
Well, I am getting ready for F1 in Las Vegas, and no, I will not be there, but I'm getting ready to follow closely along with all of the pandemonium that happens and the screaming from the other vloggers and bloggers and all the influencers that are out there in Vegas while this thing happens. But mostly, I'm just really curious. I would love to have been there or to be there for the race. I know, Chris, that doesn't have any appeal to you, but
no,
I actually think it would be fun to be there. I would like to be there for the spectacle, but I just can't make it work. But I'm excited to see what happens.
I mean, I feel like if you really love F1 and you really care about like the results of the race, it's much easier to watch on TV from an overhead view. And quite frankly,
yeah.
I think it will actually be very scenic to watch because, you know, when you get the fountain shooting in the background, and
then you'll actually see the fountains, right?
I mean, it will be really exciting to see it from that perspective. But no, I don't want to be anywhere near that city at that point until everybody's long gone. And I really don't care about F1 anyways. My issue with F1 is just I don't think there's no real benefit to the everyday Vegas visitor. If anything, it's far worse for them. And it's
That's obviously not going
anywhere near as well as they thought it would, or rates wouldn't have dropped 70 and 80% at all the properties to get a room. And now they're begging people to come.
Sure doesn't seem like it. Did you happen to see, they put for our listeners, if you don't know already, they on the overpasses over the strip and the various things, they wrapped them in.
I saw.
So you can't peek and watch the race from the overpasses. They don't want people standing there and watching the race and all that stuff. But people have torn off some of the protective coating that, you know,
yeah,
so they can
film
through
over the window to put a haze and cloud over everything. Yeah, obviously they were trying to stop people from just standing there watching, and that definitely is not going to happen. So everybody's just going to hang out on the overpasses and bridges and get a free view.
Anyway, so by the time this show drops, I think we'll be about a week away from the race or so. I haven't looked at the dates exactly, but somewhere in there. So I'm very curious, and I'm sure we'll have some commentary on what we learn after the fact on the next show.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about it then. Okay, if you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us via email. That's podcast@crapvegas.com. You can reach us on Facebook. That's crapvegas.com/Facebook. You can leave us a voicemail, that's crapvegas.com/voicemail, or the easiest way is always on Twitter.
X!
You are so good at that now. He is @VegasDuffy, I'm @SmallWhale13, or the show page is @CrapVegas. Okay, listener feedback, Josh. We got an email from Mark B. Mark said, "Absolutely love the discussion of Vegas bucket lists. I think it's something everyone has, whether they've written it down or not. For me, the couple things I absolutely want to do soon are as follows," and he lists. Number one, stay at Winter Encore and see what all the fuss is about.
There's a lot of fuss, so we encourage that, Mark.
Oh yeah, fuss, muss, all those things, tons of it. Number two, play in a high-limit table game salon. Any suggestions? Yeah, suggestions. I mean, lots of options out there. It depends on what kind of properties you like playing at, what level you want to play at. If you're looking for a low level, high limit pit and you're a blackjack player, I would actually say run over to Treasure Island. It's a very small room. It's not completely closed in by itself, but they do have a really nice bar in there. The drink service is great. Dealers are great. Highly recommend that. If you want to go much nicer than that, Cosmo has a terrific high limit space there with a great bar. Bellagio just redid Club Privé, which is pretty darn nice as well. And I think a little later, we're going to talk about a new high limit pit that opened, aren't we, Josh?
That's exactly what I was going to say, too. Yeah, I wouldn't. I think those are great recommendations, and that's what I was thinking as well.
Perfect. I'm just the best. What can I say? Number three, he wants to go to a Raiders game. I know you actually said that in the last episode, Josh. You'd like to do that.
Yeah, that's on the list for sure. So I if you make it before I do, Mark, let us know what you think. But yeah, that's something we want to do for sure.
Appreciate all you guys do and can't wait to hear the next episode, Mark. So yeah, thank you for that question, Mark. Hopefully that helps a little bit. Josh, we also got a DM from listener Alex. He said, "Hey guys, last episode you talked about Josh's trip to Zorkfest in the influencer podcasting panel. I was wondering, do you all consider yourself influencers? And does that feel weird? I know you guys jokingly say just ignore a lot of what you say, but I know I listen closely to your reviews of properties and dealers and take that seriously when I'm planning where to go on my next Vegas trip. Do you guys prefer to be anonymous? Thanks again for the show, Alex. What do you think, Josh? Are you an influencer? According to Dr. Mike, I mean, it's a hot button topic, but what do you think? Are you an influencer?
It's hard to know how to answer this question seriously or not, Alex.
I agree.
I'll say this. I think that Chris and I are really proud of the show, and we try and be as honest as we can in everything that we say in our reviews of properties or our reviews of dealers or shows or anything like that. And to the extent we have a bias, we try and communicate that with you as best we can. And but we also have fun with what we do. And I don't think our goal is to ever be, you know, 12 million followers on YouTube. So no, we're not that kind of influencer. But to the extent that we help you pick a good show or stay at a good property and have some influence on that, sure, I guess I'm proud of that. And it's fun to think of that. And, you know, honestly, when we get recognized in Vegas, either by fans or crews or things like that, that's also kind of fun. So maybe we have a little influence. Apparently, I influence people to drink pink drinks, pink lemon drops. So that counts. So
you're a bad influence is what you're saying. Right.
What do you think, Chris? How would you answer, Alex?
I mean, you know, Josh, you know me pretty well. I prefer to remain fairly anonymous. There's a reason that Josh is out there a heck of a lot more than I am. I do like my privacy from time to time, and I do like to keep my space. But that being said, I think Josh did hit the nail on the head there. We try to provide honest feedback on the places that we've been, the things that we've done, people that we see, so that if somebody is curious about a topic, at least they have somebody else's opinion on it. And if you trust us, that's great. If you don't, that's perfectly fine too. We just try to be honest. That's all we try to do. We don't do anything for the sole purpose of trying to get likes or listens or anything like that. We don't go crazy out of the way to do something we weren't going to do. But it's a weird predicament. Yes, it does feel weird when people recognize you, like on a plane, which has happened multiple times by voice. It's very strange, but at the same time, yeah, I just try not to think about it. And we do this a couple hours every week and then get back to the real world.
Yep, that's exactly right. Great question, Alex. And it is kind of, it made me think a little bit for sure.
Okay, main topic for this episode, Josh, building the perfect Vegas property. So there are so many different types of casino resorts in Las Vegas. Each property has their own like intricacy and thing that makes them unique. Some of them focus on their pools, some focus on their gaming quality, some focus on service. Josh, with that said, I thought it would be fun to discuss if we were building our own resort, somebody gave us a couple $1 billion and we wanted to build one, what would be the top five things we ensured would be part of that experience for the guests? What would we make sure are five things that's going to be there for each of us? And I know we made our list independently of one another, but I thought it would be fun to run through.
Absolutely. And Chris, I think we're talking like more 4 or 5 billion than a couple billion.
Well, you know, I guess it depends on what you could have, like a little off-strip place, Josh. I'm not judging you with what you want to build. I don't know. Here we go. So let's get into it. So Josh, tell me about your five things that you think are important if you built a resort.
So Chris and I think, looking at his list, because, you know, I get an advanced preview of his list, I think we're going to take this question a little differently, probably. We might have some overlap. But for me, the first thing, if I'm building my own property, the most important thing is to determine who I want my customer, who I want my clientele to be. And, you know, we talk about Wynn all the time. Wynn has a very clear, I think at the beginning when Steve Wynn built the property, had a very clear vision of who, what type of guest and customer he wanted. And he catered everything to that level. Table games limits, what slot machines were on the floor, what restaurants were in the property, what retail shops, and so on. I think Wynn has a really clear idea. And if we take that on the other side, go down to Excalibur, for example, I think Excalibur has a really clear idea of who it wants its customer to be, and it caters to that level. Not that there's anything wrong with either side, but I think it helps to know who you want your customer to be. And I think we'll talk about a property later that maybe has gotten into some trouble not knowing who its desired customer is or trying to aim too high. But for me, I want to know who what type of customer I want. And for me, if I'm building a property, it's going to be on the luxury side. What do you think about that, Chris?
For me as well. But yeah, it would be weird, Josh, if you walked into Wynn one day and they had a food court that had a McDonald's and a Krispy Kreme donut in it.
Exactly. And I think part of the trouble that Wynn got into, I don't know if trouble is the right word, but during the pandemic, Wynn lowered its rates down so much that some of its higher end guests were, I don't know how to say this without being kind of snooty, but were not happy with the people that were there.
Yeah.
And they kind of lost their place in the market, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think they'll ever make that mistake again. I think that was a one-time thing. Okay, what else you got, Josh?
So number two, if I'm building a property, again, this is going to be on the luxury side, it has to have full room service. That is a deal breaker for me. and I don't mean the Bellagio non-Sky Suites Aria, where if you spend over $100, you get regular cutlery and that kind of thing. I mean, if you order room service, it comes up on a room service tray and it's real cutlery, full stop. That's important to me, and that's what I would want.
Okay. I don't disagree with that either.
So far, you're staying at my property?
I'm good so far.
It's got to have a nice mix of kind of upscale casual and fine dining. So I want some casual meals. I mean, you know, we like the more casual. So Charlie's at Wynn is a good example of what I'm talking about, which is something that's above, no offense to McDonald's or White Castle, but it's above that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not fine dining. You don't need a reservation. So, but I also want to have a nice steakhouse, a nice Italian restaurant, or a nice whatever, fine dining.
Okay, good with that.
I want good gambling rules. And when I say good gambling rules, not 000 roulette, not 6-5 blackjack, not 2x odds and craps, at least in some places in the casino that aren't. I would rather have more good gambling options than not. I don't want to see the property overrun with 000 roulette or 6-5 blackjack. At the same time, I understand that if I'm opening up a property and the argument is people are playing 000 roulette, so why am I not going to offer that? And I probably am okay with that. I'm not going to say no 000 roulette, period, but at least not in high limit areas or that kind of thing.
No, I think you're on the right track there. In my eyes, what I think they should do is that if you're a property that caters to lower level gamblers, then put in a $5 game of blackjack with whatever rules you want, a $5 roulette wheel, a $5 right. craps game, and you can put whatever rules you want on that. But then once you jump up, I think $15 or higher, then you got to get the normal rules. You got to get 3-2 blackjack, you got to get 00 roulette, you know, you need a field that pays triple and craps. What do you think is a reasonable amount of odds that should be offered on the strip? I mean, 3, 4, 5 is by far the most predominant, but what do you think they should offer?
I actually think 3, 4, 5 is okay. I think if I was setting that, you said $15, I would make it 25 in my property.
Okay.
It would have to be 25 or higher, but maybe then I would offer 10 times odds. So let's say that I have a $50 minimum craps table. Maybe I allow 10 times odds at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say that I feel like if they would just jump to five across the board,
that would be great
for everybody. I mean, that's one thing I did like when I was playing at Encore up in Boston, that right. they at least allowed 5 times there. And of course, all my local properties offer 10 and 20 times odds, so we have far better than that. I'm just thinking from the perspective, what percentage of players do you think really take full odds at a craps table?
Oh, 15, I mean, even at 3, 10? Yeah, even at 3, 4, 5. I mean, me included, oftentimes don't take full. So when you go above that to 5 to 10 to 100 times odds, it gets even smaller. But yeah, I would say 15%.
I mean, that's why I was kind of thinking that I think 5 is the minimum, but offering, say, 10, 20, or even 100 times odds like Cromwell did for a while, it doesn't really matter because nobody's taking it.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's a $15 table, I mean, is anybody really putting $1,500 behind? I mean, no. I wouldn't think so. I mean, maybe in the most amazing run ever, you could get up to that point, but I just don't think offering that amount matters much. And at the same time, saying that you offer it really
gets
goodwill with the
say.
Players. So that's I would go that direction.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Back in the Cromwell, when Cromwell had the good odds and craps and 3-2 blackjack and so on. I mean, that was one of the things that drove people, yeah. me,
that was all
to Cromwell to play. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And now they're just another property.
Yeah.
So last thing on my list, and then I have a couple notes, some must-knows, but the last thing that I want for sure are milkshakes and raspberry lemon drops available pretty much anywhere on demand.
But that's super important. I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You should be able to get a milkshake delivered to you at a table anytime you want one.
Yes, and a raspberry lemon drop.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so for my no's, which you didn't even ask for no's in the question prompt, but I had a few no's. No kids on the casino floor, which is already a rule, I think, a law.
A poorly enforced rule.
Yes, exactly. But I would want it more strongly enforced. I almost went no kids on the property at all, an adults only property. But I think that if I'm going with luxury, I do want the option for families to come and enjoy Vegas that way, you know, in luxury.
I mean, I don't have a problem with places that allowed kids to come. I mean, it's not like I look down on Wynn because there are kids coming around and getting pushed around in strollers. But no, I don't want them standing behind the tables, sitting on the carpet next to a slot machine or anything like that. That does need to be cut down on. I mean, casinos are very good about no kids on the carpet. That's typically the way that it works. They have solid walkways, and if you're on that, you're okay. But don't step foot on the carpet because that's the gaming area. I do wish more people would enforce it. But no, I don't think you need to go as far as like Circa and say nobody under 18. I don't think that's necessary either.
Right. So my next one, I hope this doesn't make too many people mad, but I don't want dogs on my property.
Oh, I had that on my list too, Josh.
I just think that, you know, I mean, at Wynn went through this phase, I think they're out of it now, where they were encouraging people with dogs to come and stay there. And they had little doggy outfits, Wynn doggy outfits for sale in the gift shop. I understand people want to take their pets places, but if I have a luxury property, I don't want dogs in the room. I don't want dogs on the casino floor. It changes the feel of it for me.
I don't understand who these people are. I really don't. Like, I have dogs, have cats. I have no desire to ever take one of my pets with me on a trip, especially in a casino. I do not understand those people. No, no pets at the property. And Josh, I'll take it a step farther and say no coolers as well.
That's next on my list for a no, Chris.
Perfect.
And again, I know there's lots of our listeners that take coolers and go to the liquor store, to the whatever on the way to their room and stock up and all that kind of stuff. But if at a high-end property, I just don't want to see that on the casino floor, you know, wheeling in and out of check-in and that kind of thing. And that kind of feeds into my last no, Chris, which is, this is probably going to really piss people off. Mm-hmm. I don't want refrigerators in the room other than a mini bar, but I don't want an open fridge in the room, even though I use them. I use them. I mean, you know, I fill a bag with ice and I put it in the bathtub. So I'm, I'm not a spokesperson for this, but again, I think that encourages, if I'm trying to create a casino with a certain vibe, I don't want people taking bags of, you know, whatever from the liquor store in.
No, I mean, I don't know how I feel about that one. Cause there's been plenty of times where I ordered like a dessert on a room service meal and I didn't eat it. So I wanted to put it in the fridge so it'd stay for the next day.
I know.
So, I mean, there are parts of me that says, hey, that would be nice. And it is very snooty to say that as an option. But at the same time, I can't be upset with it.
Like I say, I mean, I violate that. I do even worse things with filling up the laundry bag with ice and putting it in the bathtub. So, I mean, you can't.
No, I get you.
But that's what I'm. That's what my last no. So that's my list.
Fair. Okay, here's mine. Number one, no more fees. And I'm talking resort fees, parking fees, ticket fees when you go see a show. I don't want any fees at a property. I feel like the price that they sell the room for, that should be the price plus tax, no hidden surprises. And if I want to go park at that casino, don't charge me to park there. You're getting enough money off me walking in the door in the first place. I just don't want to see any fees. The reason I say that is because I think people have always thought of Vegas as a great value for a vacation. And when you hit them up with 8,000 fees when they go there, they feel like they're getting nickel-dimed the whole time. The value is lost. And I do think Vegas has been losing that value for a while now.
You're absolutely right. And I didn't think of that, but that's, I mean, if I'm going to open my resort, it's going to also have the same thing, no fees. I understand logistically with placement of properties on Expedia or Priceline or whatever the reason, the argument for all that stuff. But I agree with you. I mean, well, I've said this story before, but when I used to go to Vegas, it was to stay at Circus Circus for $25 a night. And it really was $25 a night. I knew that's what I was going to pay. I had $200 for gambling and I had a great time. And I think the fees really have changed that. You can't budget the same way. They just eat into your whole trip budget.
And I think like a property like Wynn, I mean, it's such a luxurious property. It's by far the best in Vegas. And then what do they do?
Internet.
They charge you $40 to connect to the internet per device. That is the most like anti-luxurious thing I can possibly think of, is getting hit up for that much money for poor quality internet. If you pay their prices for a room, or if you're getting comp that room, you should not have to pay for internet. Sometimes those are $1,000 rooms on a weeknight. No, I'm not paying for internet on top of it.
In full disclosure for our listeners, and so Wynn has, I think it's three levels of internet. The cheapest one might be $20.
I think it is.
But even in the top one is $40, as Chris said, and it's not very good. But even at our level, we have to, at the end, you know, our host has to say, reach out and say, hey, I took the internet charges off for you, or we have to ask. Yep. It's a pain.
Yeah. Even as a black card holder, you don't get it taken off or anything like that. I mean, yeah, you got to beg your host to do his thing. And I will say, I mean, in all disclosure, they always take it off. I've never had a
point. Yeah, we haven't had to pay it.
But quite frankly, though, Josh, usually what I end up doing is just using my phone as a hotspot because I just don't even want to have the hassle of having to deal with that.
Well, and I don't do that as much, but I do think about, okay, if I start the internet at 8 p.m. on this day, I'll get 24 hours. So do I want to wait until 9 so I can, you know, that
guy. I got you.
That factors in, right?
Okay. Number two, Josh, I think that my property's got to be an all-suite hotel, but I'm thinking only like 500 rooms.
Ooh, and I think it's boutique-y.
Also, yeah, very boutique-y. And I'm thinking the elevators, it's got to feed right onto the main gaming floor. None of these long hallways, no Caesars, walk 6 miles to get to your hotel room down, or Aria where you have to go through 4 or 5 corridors. I want a small boutique hotel, larger than Cromwell, because I think that's a little too small, but nowhere near the 2,000 rooms that like a Wynn or Encore has. I'm thinking, put them all suites, make them a little bit bigger, a nice place to stay. And as soon as you get off that elevator, you're on the casino floor ready to go.
I like that idea. That seems small to me, but I like the idea.
Well, I'd rather have 100% booked up 500 room place that can drive rates up because of demand than a 2,000 room place where it's only 85% of the full.
So far, I'm buying stock in my property rather than yours, but okay, fair. You're taking away resort fees. You got only 500 rooms.
I'm not saying it's going to make a lot of money, but this is what I would do.
Okay.
Next one. I want a new Spiegelworld show at my property. I think the biggest thing that I've seen recently out of properties that are opening, they struggle at the beginning to have any sort of draw. You know, what are you going to do to get me to come to you? They try to get headliners, and that's great for a residency, but that means that you're only going to see those people like 2 days a week on the weekends, and then they disappear.
Right.
I think you need a big show that's going to get people to come, that they're going to want to come to your property to see it. And there is absolutely no better choice than just contracting with Spiegelworld and letting them do their thing. Their track record is proven at this point. They don't mess up. So hire them. Don't do a Win and try to make your own show and waste a ton of money to get a crap product. Let Spiegelworld do it.
I think that is absolutely a great idea. I didn't think of it, but you guys know how much we are raving about Spiegelworld shows right now. And yeah, if we could build that as a cornerstone of a new property, I'm all for it.
Okay. My fourth thing, Josh, we've already actually talked about. That's where I said no coolers and no dogs. So I mean, we've discussed that now. But my last one, and I think this is by far the most important to me as a gambler. If you're just a recreational gambler that doesn't worry too much, or if you're just traveling to stay at the property, this won't matter to you. But I want a players club where they specifically will tell me what my ADT is, make it available on their app, on their website, let me know what their comp policies are, make it very public. You should be able to log into your app and not only see the tier credits that you've earned, but it should have a number and says, Chris, your ADT is $612, whatever it happens to be. And you know that they comp back 20% of your ADT. And so, you know, you have $120 available on the back end for comps. That stuff should be available. I don't know why we hide it.
Yeah, I agree. It is a big mystery. I mean, you know, unless you're asking what your ratings are and your ADT, all that, we have no idea. And our hosts have told us before when we've asked. Mm-hmm. So it's not that it's a deep, dark secret. But you're right. It should be much more publicly available. I like that idea.
Yeah. Okay, so that's just a couple things I think are important. Josh, I agree with most of your list as well. You guys let us know what you think. Is there anything, if you were building a new property, that you would make sure was included?
We're going to have a nice exclusive property with no dogs, no kids. And
only rich people.
Yeah, that's
right. Going to be great. Okay, Josh, we received an email from listener Trinnell asking some questions about Resorts World, which is something we haven't talked about in a while. I guess he's got a potential business venture coming up with them, and he wanted our assistance on some feedback.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so he gave me a list of questions, and you know how I am on list. I was just more than welcome to put those on my sheet. Question one, what differentiates Resorts World Las Vegas from other properties on the Strip?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the three hotels within the hotel or within the property. Mm-hmm. I think that is some other properties have two hotels, at least. Maybe there's some that have three. And I'm thinking of Wynn Encore. I'm thinking of Caesars and Nobu, Park MGM, and what's Nomad. The one on top of Park? Nomad, thank you. You've got Delano and Mandalay Bay and Four Seasons, all I think at that same property. So there are, it's not unheard of, but I think that the way Resorts World is doing it with the three different almost tiers, and you know, and you can make an argument that the Mandalay Bay, Delano, and Four Seasons are kind of three tiers, but I think they're separate enough that I'm not thinking of them the same way. But that's fairly unique, that three hotels within the same property, different levels all.
Other than that, Josh, the only thing else I would say is unique is kind of their street eats, like food court that's on the main floor, wide open to the gaming area you just kind of walk into. There's other places that have done things similar to that, but it's fairly unique to them.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I've always compared Resorts World a little bit to Venetian, and Venetian has some of that with some of its food options, but Resorts World is different. I mean, it really is, people have said, a casino inside a mall. I don't know if that's exactly fair, but
the
way it has it, yeah.
The next question, what does Resorts World lack when it comes to competing with other casinos on the Strip?
I think this goes into what I touched on earlier, which I don't think Resorts World, especially when it opened, but maybe even now, has a great sense of who it... Not, it might have had an idea of who it wanted to be. I think it wanted to attract customers at the Wynn level, but I don't think it was ever going to do that. And I think they overpromised on the level of luxury. And I understand Crockford's is really nice, and I've stayed in a Crockford's room, and it is very nice. But when you get kind of beyond that, the casino floor is nice, but it's not knock your socks off. And I think that the other levels of rooms are okay, but they're not knock your socks off. But I think that it still had aspirations of being at the Wynn or Aria Sky Suites level. So I think that is an issue.
Yeah, when I think of Resorts World, I don't think luxury. Maybe I should. I've stayed in Crockford's rooms. They are very nice. You are correct. But there's nothing that strikes me as luxurious about Resorts World. I would say that it lacks identity. It just, yeah, you're right. It doesn't know what it's looking for, who its guest is going to be. The clientele there is nowhere near what you would expect at a luxurious property. And the location itself, if you're asking about what hurts it, I mean, the location hurts. A North Strip property, you better be something very special and have something to draw people up there, because Center Strip is where people want to be. And South Strip has a haven for kind of low-level gambling. A lot of options right there you can get to quickly. Resorts World, you don't have a ton of gambling options directly available from it other than Wynn and now Fontainebleau once it opens. But you just don't have that availability to just walk a quarter mile and be at the next property. And yeah, I don't know what it's doing to target customers, because I don't know who they're targeting.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can, you know, if you think about who you can walk to and from, you can walk to Circus Circus, and if it's targeting the Circus Circus clientele, well, that's different than the Wynn clientele, which is also walkable. They're two very different things, and you've talked about kind of their clientele as being a little rougher, and I don't know if that's necessarily true of the guests, but it's certainly true of the foot traffic that comes in on that end of the Strip. I mean, I've seen, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but I've seen people sleeping in the casino that have come in off, I think, coming off the street, and you don't get that at Wynn, usually. So it changes the, you know, if you're expecting a certain level of property and you see that, that changes the way you feel about the property.
So that kind of feeds into his third question, Josh. He said, what overall trends do you see with regards to Resorts World clientele versus other casinos? And I just refer to it as rough. The North Strip, just, it has a completely different vibe from the rest of the Strip, South and Central. It just, it's a whole different world. It's not a nice area up on the north side of the Strip. It's not an area I'd encourage you to walk around late at night.
No.
And it's just, yeah, it's rough. That's the best I can say.
I'm really curious to see. I know you're a little more pessimistic on Fontainebleau than I am. I think that's certainly gotten a lot of buzz. And I feel like it's gotten more buzz than Resorts World did when it opened. I'm curious to see if that somewhat changes the flavor of the north end of the Strip, the feel of the north end of the Strip. But we'll see.
Next question was, how would you compare their digital experience against their competitors? And I don't know, Josh, if he's referring to the app and the website or what he's talking about, but that's what I would go with.
Yeah, if he's talking about the whole cashless gaming thing, I don't even think I used it when I was there. Or if I did, it was kind of a pain. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, but I haven't been very impressed with the digital experience that I've had with Resorts World, but it hasn't been too much.
Yeah, their app, at least when it first opened, their app was a disaster. And we'll talk about a couple things in a minute, but they really pushed cashless gaming before they even opened. They wanted you to preload funds and they were going to give you a bonus. Cashless gaming has never taken off. I don't see anybody ever using it, from that matter, like walking up to a slot machine And when you go to a table, they can scan your barcode and look, but no, nobody's doing that. I was never impressed with their app. The functionality was never really there. And their websites, I'm sure, fine, like every other website, but I don't think their rooms were very technologically advanced either, though, Josh.
Chris, would it fit perfectly with the guy who threw his credit card down on the table?
Oh,
the Resorts World is the place for him, right?
Exactly. Okay, last question. I think this is the most important. If you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about Resorts World, what would it be?
That's a really good question. I think it would be eliminating some of the confusion about the three hotels. Okay. And I don't know exactly how you would do that, but I know when I stayed there, I was at Crockford's West, okay, which is actually, I think, in the Hilton Tower, or maybe it's the Conrad Tower or whatever, and trying to figure out where to check in. And the property was still relatively new, so maybe that's been smoothed out, but it was confusing to me. And if I could wave a magic wand, it would somehow be to fix that. I mean, when you're staying at Wynn, you don't confuse it with Encore. I mean, maybe some people have. Maybe the cab driver takes you to the wrong place. But for the most part, you know you're staying at Encore and you go there, or you know you're staying at Wynn. You know you're staying at Four Seasons, you go there, you know you're staying at Mandalay Bay, to go back to that example. I would fix that. What about you, Chris?
You say that, Josh. I've stayed at Resorts World 4 or 5 times, and each time I've stayed there, I've got picked up by one of their drivers. And almost every time they've dropped me off at the hotel, it's been the wrong lobby. Like, I literally walk in, I go to the special line. They don't have any sort of like VIP lounge that I saw to check in. And so I went to the invited guest line or whatever it was. And each time they're like, oh, I can check you in, but you're actually in a different tower. And then they like walk me through like a back hallway behind stuff. And they're like, here's where you're supposed to be. It does seem very confused. But I would say if I was changing one thing, it would be their Players Club program. When that thing originally opened, what a mess. They had like 6 or 7 tiers, if I remember correctly. You would advance a tier and have no clue that you advanced, nor what you were actually getting by advancing. They only had one card. So
that's what I was going to say. Do they still just have one card?
And it sounds stupid, but getting a new card in a different color, that's important to gamblers that gamble a lot. They want to have that status of advancing to a new level.
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it's when I throw a platinum card down at MGM, I'm proud of having gotten to that status, or Black at Wynn or whatever, 7 stars at Caesars. Yeah, you want to, as silly as that whole game is, you want to be able to at least show off that you achieved that.
Yeah. Well, so I looked on their website, Josh, today. They've modified it down to 4 levels. Did you know that?
Nope.
No, I don't think their marketing's doing a very good job. They've lowered it down to 4 levels, but the benefits provided, according to the website, are still extremely minimal. The top tier that they have, they call it Imperial. All it provides, on top of some stuff that nobody would ever care about, is a $500 airfare and dining credit and free valet parking. So no mention of airport transport, no mention of host access, special experiences, hotel upgrades, free show tickets, none of that stuff. You get a $500 airfare credit, a $500 dining credit, and free valet parking. And if that's what your top tier is, and that's what you're telling me I'm striving for, that's not very exciting.
I agree.
Anyways, Josh, overall thoughts on Resorts World. Is it a place that you like to visit? Is it something you want to go back to anytime soon, or are you just kind of done?
I know we have some people that are supporters of the show and fans of the show that rave about Resorts World and think it's a great property. And I had a really wonderful room there. So don't get me wrong. I think that the room product can be really nice. Again, I was at Crockford's West. I think the Conrad rooms can be nice. Probably even the basic Hilton rooms can be nice. There's just not a lot of draw there for me that would make me want to stay there over Wynn at the higher end, or Sky Suites at the higher end, or even just a regular room at Paris, for example. I'd probably rather stay at Paris or Planet Hollywood because of the location.
Yeah. I mean, I've spent a lot of time there. I still have credit open there, Josh. It's a nice place. I like the layout of the casino floor. I think it's very nice.
I do too.
Their room service was pure garbage. You had to order through an app. No modifications could be made. It came in a plastic container. I know that's a little different if you're staying in their nicest of nice suites, but the average person is not going to be in one of those, so it's kind of moot. You know, the dealers are okay. The clientele is rough. There's nothing there that makes me go, you know what I really want to do? Go to Resorts World this trip.
Yeah, unless you're going to see Katy Perry, but even then you'd probably stay somewhere else. I know she just ended her residency, but whoever it is they've got, you'd probably stay somewhere else.
It's like something at Rio. If there was a show there, I'd take a taxi over there and see it and then come right back to my hotel.
No Rio for Penn Teller?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you want to, go crazy for your nerd pew-pew content. You
know, been there, but, done that. I think I'm done with Rio for a while.
Fair enough. So thank you, Trenholm, for the questions. Hopefully that helps you with your project a little bit. And if you need anything else, just reach out and let us know. Listener questions and comments time, Josh. We got an email from Wendy. Wendy said, "Hi, guys. Love the pod. My husband and I are going to Vegas soon." Keep in mind, she sent this about 2 months ago, so that she probably already went. And we wanted to know, what are your three favorite nice/fancy restaurants and three favorite casual restaurants in Vegas? Thanks. Wish us luck, Wendy. Josh, what are your top three fancy restaurants in Vegas?
Well, first, Wendy, I hope you had good luck. I hope you went to all the restaurants we're going to suggest.
Please.
We're sorry we didn't get to your question until now. I blame Chris. So I have, when I'm thinking about fancy restaurants, I'm thinking about, obviously, a nice steakhouse. And we've talked again about our preferences, but I'm going to say Strip House at Planet Hollywood as my number one steakhouse choice. And SW or Prime, I'm going to put as 2A and 2B, depending on if you want to stay at Bellagio and have the fountains, or if you want the Wynn experience. Either of those are fantastic top-end, high-end steakhouses. And the last one is going to be Sinatra at Wynn, which is the Italian restaurant. And I've only been there once, and the menu is a little bit, it's not a huge menu as I remember, but I loved it. I really thought it was fantastic. What are your top three high-end fancy restaurants, Chris?
I'm not going to add anything to your list, Josh. I'd say maybe throw John George on there. I know you haven't had it yet. It's very good as well, but I think those are all awesome options. I'll at least give some feedback on my casual choices, and I think we'll be all over the board on this one. The three that I had, first, I said Peppermill. I used to go there a ton. I used to take a taxi ride up there every trip.
I've never been there.
Oh, it's so good, Josh. Get some good food. They have great burgers. They have good milkshakes. So you would like that too?
Yeah, you're going to have to take me.
And it's got a cool vibe to the place. And quite frankly, with the North End starting to get some more properties, it'll probably get busier up there as well. Number two for me, the Henry at Cosmo. I don't know if you've ever eaten there.
Never been there either.
But they open at like 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night. And then they're open until like brunch ends the next day. And then they close down during the day. They have weird hours. But they are terrific for late night dining. If you want some late night munchies, or especially if you want to get their brunch in the morning, they have some great stuff. And third, I would say Gordon Ramsay Burger over at Planet Hollywood. If you just want a good burger and some fries, there's not a lot of better options, I think, for casual burgers.
I agree with you on that, too. My list is different, but I agree with the only one of yours that I've been to is Gordon Ramsay, so I agree with that for sure. Fair. The others are appealing. I thought of Charlie's, which I mentioned already at Wynn, which is their sports bar-y kind of casual dining option. It has some great food. Much better milkshakes than room service.
It does.
When you could get milkshakes at room service. And really good. People rave about their pretzel. I like their sweet and spicy chicken tenders are fantastic. Just some really good options at Charlie's. What is it? Giordano's, the Chicago pizza place that's Giordano's, out
in front of Bally's. Yeah,
in front of Bally's or Horseshoe. Is
No, it's still Bally's to me.
I've only been there a couple times, but I really love, if you're into Chicago pizza and you want to get it in Vegas, it was really good. And I think that's a great casual dining spot. And then something I've mentioned before, you're probably going to guess Moneyline Pizza. It's not that. It's Posh Burger.
Oh, wow.
Also at Aria, right next to Moneyline.
What a big surprise.
Well, because they have milkshakes.
What is it with you and milkshakes? Jeez, you were addicted.
I like milkshakes.
You know, I want to throw out an honorable mention, but the place has been closed for a couple years now, and I'm still sad about it. Blue Ribbon Fried Chicken, talking about in front of Bally's, Josh. They used to be in the promenade there. It was the best chicken tenders and shoestring fries in Vegas by far. Nothing came close to it. They started getting in a little trouble towards the end. The portion sizes went down. Their fries changed. Their sauces went down. It got bad, but I'll tell you what, if they could bring that place back in their prime, that is by far my favorite food in Vegas.
Okay, next show, Chris, topic for the next show. What long-gone Vegas thing would you like to see back?
Oh, boy, I got a lot of those too, so that'd be cool.
There we go, okay.
Okay, so Wendy, I hope that helps you. A couple options for you on the fancy and the casual side. We got a question from Ace Boone on the CV Facebook group. He said, after a good roll, do you color up and take a break, or do you stay hoping for another good roll? Great question.
Thanks, Ace Boone, and I almost always stay too long. Mm-hmm. Some of it probably depends on when the good roll comes. If I'm winding down a session, whether it's good or bad, and I know I, you know, not just have a plane to catch, but whatever, I'm just feeling like it's near the end and I have a good roll, then I'll almost immediately color up. If it's at the beginning and it's a good roll, I probably won't. And if it's in the middle, it could go either way. What I try and do, and I think this is a good, for what it's worth, rule of thumb, is after a good roll, assuming I'm not just going to walk away because I'm ready to be done for whatever reason, but if I want to stick around a little bit, I'll say, okay, I'll play it back down to X dollars. So I can, if the next roll is bad, or maybe I'll do one more roll. If the next roll is bad, I'm out of here. The next roll is good, I keep going, and so on. But so it depends on the situation, but I usually stick around a little longer after a good roll, but I try not to give it all back. How about you, Chris?
You nailed it, and I think this is how I responded to him on the Facebook group. But if it's something that's been going really poorly, so let's say I'm down 80% of my original buy-in and we have a great roll, I'm coloring up immediately after. I'm saying, okay, we made it back. I didn't think I was going to get back to average. And then I just say I'm walking away. If it's at the beginning, I try to base it on historical play. What do I think my peak is going to be with the way things are going? And I try not to give back more than half of it. So let's say I bought in for $1,000 and we have an amazing roll and we get up to 1800. I would say, okay, I'm going to play to 1400 and then go. And maybe that's right. One more roll. Maybe it's two, maybe it's 50, who knows? But I just say, once I get up to the point where I'm a winner for that session, I do not like walking away as a loser. And so I usually will beat Josh up if we get up really high and say, Josh, I'm not leaving with less than X dollars. And that's how I just try to, even if that means just switching to another table 10 minutes from then, I try to leave that session a winner.
Which is what I often say when I color up after something. It's like, I won't be gone long. You'll see me again soon.
Yeah, exactly. And you may just do a walk around the pit and grab a drink or play a slot for a second or just talk for a minute. But it just, there's something I think mentally positive about just walking away from a session a winner and then hitting the refresh button on the next session. And then you got a couple extra chips in your pocket from where you started. So even if it goes poorly, you're still doing okay.
Yep, I agree.
Okay, final comment of the week, Josh. We received a tweet from Michael Traeger, that's at TravelZork on Twitter. He pointed out something I found very interesting. He said, the new Palazzo High Limit Salon is dope. I don't think I've referred to anything as dope in a while, but so be it.
I'm not sure I ever have.
He said, they're pouring decent champagne and awesome cocktails, nice premium pours, 8 to 5 Jacks are better at the bar top machines, lovely space, he says. But the only thing that actually got my attention and made me say, well, maybe I need to go over there, is he said they do have a $50 craps table, Josh, in the high limit pit.
Now, I have never played craps in a high limit pit. And because I haven't played craps, I guess I've played a key once in a while in a $100 table. But most of the times, if I'm going into a high limit room of any type, I'm going to throw a little money in a slot machine. Mm-hmm. Chris has done it, been in there more often for blackjack. But a $50 craps table would be right up our alley.
No, I would love that. And I'm glad to see that they consider high limit $50. Because Wynn would consider $50 their bottom basement, lowest level they offer. What do you think, Josh, a high limit table at Wynn would start at if it was open to the public? I mean, they have private reserve tables 500. Behind the bar, but that's, right. I mean, that's 500. Usually people playing, you know, $5,000-$10,000 a roll.
I'm thinking $300 or $500. What about you?
Think so? I was thinking 500 is probably a safe number.
Yeah, because the ones up behind the bar at Wynn are almost always reserved. So I don't think I've seen a limit there.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah, we'll have to poke around and see if we can find one. But I agree, it's probably 500.
You know, it's funny though, Josh, thinking about this, because, you know, obviously I haven't played a Venetian, well, at least anytime recently. It's been a long time ago when it was blackjack. It wasn't craps.
Right.
But people, when they talk about like luxury properties in Vegas, they usually refer to Venetian Palazzo as like a sort of equivalent to Wynn Encore. But if they're saying high limit craps is $50, it's clearly not equivalent from a gaming perspective.
Well, I agree with you. People tend to lump them together. In my experience, it's not that. It's somewhere between, it's below Aria, in my opinion. It's below Sky Suites at Aria and Wynn, but it's above Caesar's Palace and somewhere in that. I mean, all the rooms are suites, so that has some. But yeah, I don't know exactly where it fits, but I like the property. Don't get me wrong. I like the property. And again, I'm kind of excited to check out this high limit salon.
Yeah, I talked to Josh earlier today. I told him that we need to schedule a Venetian trip for early in 2024. And we're serious about that. I think we need to Let's reach out to a host, get a weekend set up, and then we can tell people what we think.
I'd like that. So thanks for that tidbit, Michael.
Okay, Patreon. Patreon.com/CrapVegas. All sorts of exciting stuff going on over there now, Josh. Any quick updates for people?
Oh, we had a great, exciting show on Patreon last week. We dove into the Caesars earnings call, which I know excites people to no end.
Wow, you're so really encouraging people to get over there.
So join us over on Patreon. No, it was a fun discussion. It was on that part of our Patreon show. Our CVP episode was only about 10 minutes, so we didn't kill you with Caesars earnings talk. No, we just dove into a few things that I thought might be fun. But we talked about other fun things on the last show, too. We always try, as we say every show, we try and give you at least 30 minutes to an hour of content on the Patreon side as well. And that's once a week, opposite or alternating weeks with this show.
And if you like sports betting, the Fade Chris and Josh football picks of the week, I'm now positive, Josh. I'm up to 13-12 overall for the year, which is awesome. I'm getting there. And if you've been fading Josh's NFL picks, you would now be 16-7-1. That is insane. So even if you don't even care about us, just pay for a membership so you can come get Josh's picks and fade them. Because, I mean, it's guaranteed, but you're going to get a hell of a lot more than what we charge you to be a patron. So
I don't think I couldn't pick losers as well as I'm trying to pick winners and losing.
No, I've said that many times. If you were intentionally trying to give the worst 5 picks a week, you still wouldn't be doing worse than Josh is.
So over on Patreon, if you don't know already, we have a little contest. And the idea was, if either Chris or I or both of us finished above 500, or some of our patrons would get a little prize, or we'd choose a patron to get a prize. But in this case, Chris is actually over 500 now, so our patrons could get something from that.
You're in the money.
And
right
if
now.
You just and if you just straight fade my picks on your own, you're doing really well.
Killing it, much better than I would do. A special thank you to all those people that did sign up in the past couple weeks. That's Tariq Q, Bobby Bones. I wonder if it's the real Bobby Bones, Josh.
Who's Bobby Bones?
The radio guy? Hosted American Idol 2, all that stuff.
I'm old.
Okay, never mind. I'm going to assume it's just a guy named Bobby that likes to throw the bones at the craps table, but you never know.
That'd be my guess.
Okay. Kevin L, Sarah F, and Dice God 11.
Back to Bobby Bones. Is he a skinny fella?
Yeah, he's very skinny, very tall.
Okay, so skeleton kind of bones idea.
I think he's the number one like radio show in America. He's based in Nashville. It's a country thing. Seems like a nice guy. I don't know.
Bobby Bones. All right. Okay, now back to Dice God. What were we going to say about Dice God?
Oh, I was just wondering if that was a nickname that was given to him, if he just truly is that persona. I was just curious how that worked out.
Very curious, too.
Great.
Thanks to our patrons. Thanks to you, to those of you that have been with us since the beginning of our Patreon shows. And thanks to our new subscribers as well. It means a lot to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Upcoming trips. You got anything planned, Josh?
So I think it's time to unveil officially. I've already kind of hinted at it and a few people know, but I will be in Vegas at Wynn for the opening of Fountain Blue. And when I say for the opening, I will be there during the opening. I'm trying to decide on a Chris, you can guess. What do you think the chances are I actually go to Fountain Blue? 80%?
It depends on how the dice are going, but I would say somewhere between 50-60.
Okay. So my goal when I booked this trip, I wanted to get back to Wynn to finish off and make the black tier, which I'm really close to. And I timed it with the opening of Fountain Blue on purpose so I could go there. But now I'm wondering if I actually will.
Oh, well, fair enough. So I'm going to be there December 8th through 10th. Right before Josh arrives, I'll be there, and then I'll get out of Dodge right before he pulls into town. Why we couldn't coordinate is beyond me. But if that is a week you have any sort of availability, you'll probably see one of us there, and I will be staying at Wynn as well that trip.
I think there will be a lot of people in town seriously for Fountain Blue, and as many of you as want to come over to Wynn and see me, you know where to find me. And if I happen to make it over to Fountain Blue, I really actually do plan on it. I'll see lots of you over there. I know Joyce is going to be there. I think quite a few of our listeners are going to be there, and lots of influencers going back to whoever's question that was at the beginning of the show.
Josh, is Adam Bauer going to be there?
He's actually going to be there a few days later. I think he's going to miss us both. I think he comes in like the Thursday that I leave or something like that.
Well, there's no influencer that I listen to more than Adam.
He'll be happy with that.
A friendly reminder to subscribe, like, and review on your favorite podcasting app and to visit our merch store at crapvegas.com/shop. Josh, anything else we need to talk about before we get out of here?
I can't think of a single thing. I'm very excited. Chris and I are already planning. We've got a January trip on the books. We've got a, in theory, a March trip on the books. So we're already getting excited for next year in Vegas, trying to figure out if we're going to go noir, if we're going to try and get our black status back at Wynn, if we're going to do Venetian Palazzo, all those kind of
crazy year, isn't it?
But it's fun. We're already planning next year's, the beginning of next year's trip. So that's kind of fun. Oh, Chris, before we go, I thought of one more thing I forgot to say. There were a couple of our listeners, longtime listeners to the show, that I forgot to mention that I saw at Zorkfest. Graham, who runs the Chef Timony podcast, was there. Chef Timony podcast was there and played with us at the Coffee Dice session. And Elliot Vegas Vice was also there and played with us at the Coffee Dice session. So I forgot to give a shout out to those two on the last show. So I wanted to specifically mention them. That's it for me.
Okay. Well, thank you guys all for listening. We will talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Vegas, here we come.
Thanks for listening to the Crap Vegas Podcast.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
Check out all our recent news and our Vegas trip calendar by visiting crapvegas.com.
See you in Vegas.
Coming up on Crap Vegas.
This
we'll talk about Vegas. This week on Crap Vegas.
That would scare people.